Part 7, Psychology. Diagnoses. When Gacy was charged with sodomy in 1968, he was required to undergo psychiatric evaluation at the University of Iowa's psychiatric hospital. He was analyzed by two doctors for 17 days, starting on September 12, 1968, and their conclusion was that he had antisocial personality disorder, would not benefit from any treatment, and would likely always be a menace to society. He scored an IQ of 118, which put him in the bright to normal range, excelling in comprehension, which showed a high degree of social intelligence or awareness of the proper way to behave in order to influence people, according to Dr. Guerin, a psychiatrist. He also said, "The most striking aspect of the test results is the patient's total denial of responsibility for anything that has happened to him. He can produce an alibi for everything. He alternatively blames the environment while presenting himself as a victim of circumstance, and blames other people while presenting himself as the victim of others who are out to get him." These words are chilling when one considers how Gacy operated as a serial killer. After serving only 18 months of his 10-year sentence, psychiatrists that formed part of the parole board said, "While he would need further counseling, if returned to live with his family, he would very likely not be involved in the same type of offense as he is presently incarcerated for." Correctional Counselor Lyle Eugene Murray. The likelihood of his again being charged with and convicted of antisocial conduct appears to be small. Dr. Richard Lee. Persons similar to Mr. Gacy seem to do best when they are firm, consistent external controls on their behavior, said Dr. Leonard Heston. He was released back into society on parole, and even though he violated the terms within a few months, he managed to stay under the radar for almost a decade before he was sentenced again, this time for serial murder with 33 known victims. In the year before his trial, Gacy spent more than 300 hours with doctors at the Menard Correctional Center to determine if he was mentally fit to stand trial and to get his defense counsel the evidence that they needed to prove that he was insane at the time that he committed the murders. He underwent a variety of psychological tests, which at some point included getting legally intoxicated and being given sodium amytal, truth serum, to assess whether that would cause the personality shifts that he had referred to in his confession. However, only one personality state was ever observed, and while Gacy did not demonstrate violence in his inebriated state, he did show signs of psychosis, being out of touch with reality. Gacy claimed that he had four personalities: the contractor, the clown, the politician, and the policeman, using the name Jack Hanley when he referred to his policeman persona. He told police that Jack was the one who hated homosexuals, who was a necrophiliac, and who committed some of the murders that he was being accused of. When they called him Jack, there was no response from him. He only answered to his own name, John. 8 psychiatrists and 5 psychologists testified in court, and as expected, results and opinions varied. Some believed that he was insane during the time that he committed the murders, while others had concluded that he was purely a sadistic predator with deviant sexual urges. 3 experts diagnosed him as a paranoid schizophrenic with multiple personality disorder, now called dissociative identity disorder. Most experts agreed that he had some form of schizophrenia as well as antisocial personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and psychosis. Let's take a closer look at his primary diagnoses. Antisocial personality disorder, ASPD. Source: pubmed.ncbi.nlm.nih.gov. Antisocial personality disorder, ASPD, is a deeply ingrained and rigid dysfunctional thought process that focuses on social irresponsibility with exploitive, delinquent, and criminal behavior with no remorse. Disregard for and the violation of others' rights are common manifestations of this personality disorder, which displays symptoms that include failure to conform to the law, inability to sustain consistent employment, deception, manipulation for personal gain, and incapacity to form stable relationships. The following are criteria to be diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder: a pervasive pattern of disregard for and violation of the rights of others since age 15 years, as indicated by three or more of the following: failure to conform to social norms concerning lawful behaviors, such as performing acts that are grounds for arrest; deceitfulness, repeated lying, use of aliases, or conning others for pleasure or personal profit; impulsivity or failure to plan; irritability and aggressiveness, often with physical fights or assaults; reckless disregard for the safety of self or others; consistent irresponsibility, failure to sustain consistent work behavior or honor monetary obligations; lack of remorse, being indifferent to or rationalizing having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another person. The individual is at least age 18 years. Evidence of conduct disorder typically with onset before age 15 years. The occurrence of antisocial behavior is not exclusively during schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. Narcissistic personality disorder, NPD. Source: psychcentral.com. Narcissistic personality disorder is characterized by a long-standing pattern of grandiosity, either in fantasy or actual behavior, an overwhelming need for admiration, and usually a complete lack of empathy towards others. People with this disorder often believe that they are of primary importance in everybody's life, including anyone they meet. While this pattern of behavior may be appropriate for a king in 16th century England, it is generally considered inappropriate for most ordinary people today. People with narcissistic personality disorder often display snobbish, disdainful, or patronizing attitudes. For example, an individual with this disorder may complain about a clumsy waiter's rudeness or stupidity, or conclude a medical evaluation with a condescending evaluation of the physician. In layperson terms, someone with this disorder may be described simply as a narcissist or as someone with narcissism. Both terms generally refer to someone with narcissistic personality disorder. A personality disorder is an enduring pattern of inner experience and behavior that deviates from the norm of the individual's culture. The pattern is seen in two or more of the following areas: cognition, affect, interpersonal functioning, or impulse control. The enduring pattern is inflexible and pervasive across a broad range of personal and social situations. It typically leads to significant distress or impairment in social, work, or other areas of functioning. The pattern is stable and of long duration, and its onset can be traced back to early adulthood or adolescence. In order for a person to be diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, NPD, they must meet five or more of the following symptoms: has a grandiose sense of self-importance, example, exaggerates achievements and talents, expects to be recognized as superior without commensurate achievements, is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love, believes that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by or should associate with other special or high status people or institutions, requires excessive admiration, has a very strong sense of entitlement. Example, unreasonable expectations of especially favorable treatment or automatic compliance with his or her expectations. Is exploitative of others. For example, takes advantage of others to achieve his or her own ends. Lacks empathy. Example, is unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of others. Is often envious of others or believes that others are envious of him or her. Regularly shows arrogant, haughty behaviors or attitudes. Because personality disorders describe long-standing and enduring patterns of behavior, they are most often diagnosed in adulthood. It's fairly uncommon for them to be diagnosed in childhood or adolescence, because a child or teen is under constant development, personality changes, and maturation. However, if it is diagnosed in a child or teen, the features must have been present for at least 1 year. NPD is more prevalent in males than females and is thought to occur in around 6% of the general population, according to research. Borderline Personality Disorder, BPD. Source, ncbi.nlm.nih.gov. A pervasive pattern of instability in interpersonal relationships, self-image, and affects, and marked impulsivity beginning by early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts, as indicated by five or more of the following. Frantic efforts to avoid real or imagined abandonment, a pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of idealization and devaluation. Identity disturbance, markedly and persistently unstable self-image or sense of self. Impulsivity in at least two areas that are potentially self-damaging, for example, spending, sex, substance abuse, reckless driving, binge eating. Recurrent suicidal behavior, gestures or threats, or self-mutilating behavior. Affective instability due to a marked reactivity of mood. Intense episodic dysphoria, irritability or anxiety usually lasting a few hours and only rarely more than a few days. Chronic feelings of emptiness, inappropriate intense anger or difficulty controlling anger. Example, frequent displays of temper, constant anger, recurrent physical fights. And transient stress-related paranoid ideation or severe dissociative symptoms. Multiple personality disorder, now called dissociative identity disorder. Source, psychiatry.org. Dissociative identity disorder, DID, is associated with overwhelming experiences, traumatic events, and/or abuse that occurred in childhood. DID was previously referred to as multiple personality disorder. Symptoms of DID, the criteria for diagnosis, include the existence of two or more distinct identities or personality states. The distinct identities are accompanied by changes in behavior, memory, and thinking. The signs and symptoms may be observed by others or reported by the individual. Ongoing gaps in memory about everyday events, personal information, and/or past traumatic events. The symptoms cause significant distress or problems in social, occupational, or other areas of functioning. In addition, the disturbance must not be a normal part of a broadly accepted cultural or religious practice. As noted in the DSM-5, in many cultures around the world, experiences of being possessed are a normal part of spiritual practice and are not dissociative disorders. The attitude and personal preferences, for example, about food, activities, clothes of a person with DID may suddenly shift and then shift back. The identities happen involuntarily and are unwanted and cause distress. People with DID may feel that they have suddenly become observers of their own speech and actions, or their bodies may feel different, example, like a small child, like the opposite gender, huge and muscular. While most experts agreed that John Wayne Gacy did not exhibit any symptoms of DID, some were convinced that he did. One real-life example that was documented was how Jason Moss, a criminal defense attorney who authored the book The Last Victim, experienced Gacy when he spent time with him in prison. He visited him for 2 days and reported how he rapidly and distinctly switched between at least two personality states. One was charming, friendly, and accommodating, while the other was sadistic, predatory, violent, and threatening. With this disorder, switches between states are involuntary and require some sort of trigger. It is possible that Gacy had this disorder, especially considering that extensive research has been carried out in the last 4 decades. Obsessive Compulsive Disorder, OCD. Source, psychiatry.org. OCD is a disorder in which people have recurring, unwanted thoughts, ideas, or sensations, obsessions, that make them feel driven to do something repetitively, compulsions. The repetitive behaviors such as hand washing, checking on things, or cleaning can significantly interfere with a person's daily activities and social interactions. Many people with OCD have distressing thoughts or repetitive behaviors. However, these thoughts and behaviors do not typically disrupt daily life. For people with OCD, thoughts are persistent and behaviors are rigid. Not performing the behaviors commonly causes great distress. Many people with OCD know or suspect their obsessions are not realistic. Others may think they could be true, known as limited insight. Even if they know their obsessions are not realistic, people with OCD have difficulty disengaging from the obsessive thoughts or stopping the compulsive actions. A diagnosis of OCD requires the presence of obsessions and/or compulsions that are time-consuming, more than 1 hour a day, cause significant distress, and impair work or social functioning. OCD affects 2-3% of people in the United States, and among adults, slightly more women than men are affected. OCD often begins in childhood, adolescence, or early adulthood. The average age symptoms appear is 19 years old. Gacy was described as having severely obsessive-compulsive behavior, which relates to his logbooks and diaries, work schedule, routines, and habits. For example, when police had arrested him and took him to his house to show them where he had buried the body under the garage, he was disproportionately upset about his garage shelves being in disarray and spent time first getting it back in order. He worried more about the cleanliness and state of his house, especially when he saw a spot of mud on the carpet, than worrying about the severe charges he was facing. Being neat, tidy, and pedantic does not mean that someone has OCD. In Gacy's psychological evaluation, it was the complete study of his mind that led psychologists to this diagnosis. An association between childhood trauma and obsessive-compulsive symptoms has been reported in some studies. More research is needed to understand this relationship better. Psychosis. Source, ncbi.nlm.nih.gov. The word psychosis is used to describe conditions that affect the mind, where there has been some loss of contact with reality. When someone becomes ill in this way, it is called a psychotic episode. During a period of psychosis, a person's thoughts and perceptions are disturbed, and the individual may have difficulty understanding what is real and what is not. Symptoms of psychosis include delusions, false beliefs, and hallucinations, seeing or hearing things that others do not see or hear. Other symptoms include incoherent or nonsense speech and behavior that is appropriate for the situation. A person in a psychotic episode may also experience depression, anxiety, sleep problems, social withdrawal, lack of motivation, and difficulty functioning overall. From Healthline.com. Psychosis is characterized by an impaired relationship with reality. It's a symptom of serious mental disorders. People who are experiencing psychosis may have either hallucinations or delusions. Hallucinations are sensory experiences that occur within the absence of an actual stimulus. For example, a person having an auditory hallucination may hear their mother yelling at them when their mother isn't around. Or someone having a visual hallucination may see something, like a person in front of them who isn't actually there. The person experiencing psychosis may also have thoughts that are contrary to actual evidence. These thoughts are known as delusions. Some people with psychosis may also experience loss of motivation and social withdrawal. These experiences can be frightening. They may also cause people who are experiencing psychosis to hurt themselves or others. It's important to see a doctor right away if you or someone you know is experiencing symptoms of psychosis. Symptoms of psychosis include difficulty concentrating, depressed mood, sleeping too much or not enough, anxiety, suspiciousness, withdrawal from family and friends, delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech such as switching topics erratically, depression, and suicidal thoughts or actions. Childhood. Gacy's life began with a challenging birth that he almost did not survive. While he did survive, he struggled with headaches, blackouts, and fainting spells that resulted in him being frequently hospitalized. He was named after a famous Western movie actor, John Wayne, and was born on St. Patrick's Day in 1942. Throughout his life, Gacy liked to be called the Duke, because this was John Wayne, the actor's nickname. His father was not amused by his perceived weakness and resorted to abusing his only son at every turn. One of Gacy's earliest memories was being beaten by his father for playing with disassembled car parts that he had laid out on the concrete. A small child would not have known that the parts were arranged in a specific order, and in Gacy's mind, he was just trying to bond with his dad. While his mother and sisters loved him to bits, he was never accepted by his father, even though he never gave up on trying to be. When he was 2, he witnessed his father beating his mother from a bedroom window. Her teeth were knocked out and neighbors called the police to intervene. Gacy and his sisters undoubtedly experienced tremendous trauma in a tumultuous household, with him receiving the most physical abuse because he was a boy. According to his sister, their father used to challenge him to hit him, which Gacy never did. Eventually, he got so used to the abuse that he did not cry anymore, instead numbing himself out and dissociating from the trauma. This could have given him the ability to compartmentalize his experiences and modes of behavior, a skill which he used in adult life to simultaneously function as a successful businessman, charitable clown, husband, father, and serial killer. When Gacy was between the age of 5 and 6, he was molested by a 12 to 15-year-old girl who struggled with a mental disability. His mother caught them and, while she was shocked, did not punish him. When his father heard about it, he beat him for it. As a kid, he enjoyed building forts with his best friend, Barry Boschelli, who lived on the same block. They enjoyed collecting wood and scrap metal to build forts on a vacant lot that they called the Prairie, where they would cook potatoes over an open fire and socialize with other kids in the neighborhood. His father destroyed any forts that he built around the house, so Gacy kept the Prairie a secret. His normal social activities with other boys became one of the many secrets he had to keep from his family to avoid the constant abuse, which would have had a significant impact on his psychological development. He struggled with his weight throughout his life and was a chunky, overweight kid from a young age. Eating was a source of comfort for his emotional trauma since he was little, and his love of food continued until he was executed. His final meal was a selection of his favorite foods, complete with dessert and a Diet Coke. Perhaps he just liked the taste, or was used to balancing out unhealthy meals with diet sodas. Due to space limitations, Gacy shared a bed with his sister until he was 10 years old. In letters that he wrote to Jason Moss, the author of The Last Victim, he said that he had incestual relations with one of his sisters. This was never confirmed, but it is interesting to consider, particularly because he tried to pressure Jason into engaging in sexual relations with his younger brother. When Gacy was 11, he was struck on the forehead by one of the swings that he and his friends regularly played on. It knocked him unconscious, and his friends had to wheel him home in a toy wagon. He struggled to form sentences and mixed up his words for up to 3 weeks following this incident, and was frequently hospitalized for fainting and blackout spells. His friends believed that he was never the same after this injury, even though his performance at school had not significantly dropped. He was part of the Boy Scouts, but struggled with managing his temper and abiding by the rules, often challenging them. On one occasion, he stormed off after a disagreement with one of the camp members and was found dehydrated on the side of the road several hours later, after which he was dismissed from the Boy Scouts. Gacy had a natural entrepreneurial flair and came up with many ways for him and Buscelli to earn an income. One of the ways was to convert Buscelli's basement into a restaurant, where they used an old stove and set up tables with little tablecloths and chairs to host the kids in the neighborhood for meals. Their sisters helped with the serving, and the pair served hot dogs, soups, hamburgers, and sandwiches. As they got older, they also offered their services to neighbors by cutting the grass, sweeping up leaves, and doing chores that would earn them a reward. During this time, Gacy had expanded his fort-building skills to build his own furniture, which included his own bookshelf that he proudly displayed in his bedroom. He was always known to dress neatly at school and had strong leadership qualities from a young age. At Christmas time, he and Buscelli went caroling in the neighborhood with other kids, and it was reported that Gacy's solo performances sometimes moved people to tears. They were gifted with warm milk, cookies, and sometimes money, and Christmas became a special time for Gacy. In 1969, while he was in prison, he dressed up as Santa Claus and entertained the other inmates, which demonstrated his warm feelings towards the tradition. When he was about 9 years old, he was sexually abused by a male friend of his father's, even though he did not tell anyone about it at the time. The man allegedly invited him on drives in his truck and tricked him into locking his head between his legs. He did not feel safe to communicate the abuse to his parents, instead refusing to talk to him or go along with him on any more rides. When he was 10, the family moved to a new home, which Gacy said he was excited about. Perhaps he felt that it would be a fresh start for him and his family. Unfortunately, much to his disappointment, his father continued to abuse him throughout his life, no matter where they lived or how hard he tried to please him. When he was approximately 11 years old, he discovered his mother's underwear and enjoyed the soothing feeling of silk on his hands, eventually also slipping them on to wear. He started stealing more of her panties and hiding them in a brown paper bag underneath the porch, in the crawl space. He had learned from an early age that the best way to hide the things that he enjoyed was to bury them underneath the house, a behavior that continued into adulthood when we consider that he buried most of his victims in the crawl space underneath his own house. When his mother discovered the bag, she humiliated him by forcing him to wear it in front of her. When his father heard about this, Gacy was beaten and verbally abused. At one stage, he was knocked unconscious with a broom, with his father calling him a sissy, a mama's boy, and other derogatory terms. He recalled going on a fishing trip with his dad when he was 11 years old and felt that everything that went wrong on the trip was directly his fault. His child mind had absorbed the shame and guilt that is common when exposed to frequent trauma, especially from a parental figure. Interestingly, Gacy said that his memories from age 12 upwards were a blank, which could have been due to a certain level of dissociation based on the trauma that he expected on an almost daily basis. Adolescence. In their adolescence, Gacy and Bashelli picked up junk from neighbors and refurbished the items to resell or give as gifts to other members of the community. They worked a newspaper route, stocked shelves at a grocery store, and generally took a lot of action to generate some pocket money for themselves. Gacy was tasked with buying sanitary towels for his sisters when he was a teenager, which he described as being an uncomfortable experience. At the age of 15, he had his appendix removed. When he was 16, he started taking medication for a heart ailment and could not participate in extramural activities at school. His blackouts became so severe that he had to take medication for a blood clot that was caused by his head injury at age 11. After a few months, the clot had dissolved and the problem seemed to be resolved. Naturally, his father saw his health issues as girlish and despised his sickly ways, which continued the cycle of abuse. When Gacy was 16, he formulated his dream of becoming involved in politics and dropped out of high school. By the time he was 18, he was involved in the Democratic Party in his neighborhood. His mother had an adult conversation with him around the age of 16, telling him that sex is very beautiful and should never be forced. He reported that he had his first sexual experience with a woman when he was 18 years old and found it pleasurable, even though he admittedly struggled with the pressure of trying to hide the fact that it was his first time. He also said that he had some sexual experiences with his cousins, but it is not certain to what degree. He reached a psychological breaking point from his father's incessant abuse at the age of 20 and fled his home to search for work in Las Vegas. He enjoyed the work he did with the ambulance company and was then shifted to work in a mortuary where he was exposed to corpses for the first time. On one occasion, he felt the urge to lie next to a young man's corpse, which started off as nothing more than morbid curiosity. Once he was in contact with it, he slid it on top of him to feel a form of closeness. The thrill and new feeling shocked him to the point of calling his mother and asking if he could return home, which he then did. As a serial killer, he was also an active necrophiliac, even though he struggled to accept it. Instead, he blamed it on Jack, an alternate personality, which may have simply been an alias to help him compartmentalize the guilt and shame that he felt about homosexuality and necrophilia. Adulthood and sexuality. As an adult, Gacy weighed between 195 and 230 pounds, was 5 feet 9 inches in height, 175 centimeters, and mostly wore neutral or dark-colored clothing. Psychiatrists described him as well-groomed, always neatly dressed, and usually wearing colorless clothing. He had no tattoos. When Gacy was 19, he stole women's underwear from the clothing store where he worked, which he said he used for arousal. When he was 22, his sister got married, and his parents celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary. In that same year, he married Marlon Myers and had his first homosexual experience with a fellow member of the local Jaycees, which reflects some of his inner conflicts and the proactive way that he dealt with uncomfortable feelings relating to low self-image and feeling inadequate in comparison to his dad or sister. When he was 23, he had a son, and at age 24, a daughter. He described feeling hatred towards his father-in-law, believing that he was overworking him and that he did not deserve his respect, which could be a side effect of finally getting the thumbs up from his own father once he had said, "Son, I was wrong about you." Sometimes a sudden boost of narcissistic supply can lead to the discard of others who are ranked as less important. So for Gacy, his father's approval may have translated into the rejection of any external mentors and father figures in his life. By 1967, the couple had decided to spice things up in their marriage and participated in the swingers parties that the local Jaycees held. In 1968, when he was charged with sodomy and sentenced to 10 years in prison, his wife filed for divorce, to which he responded that he could have had her on 11 counts of adultery. She was awarded the house, full custody of the children, and alimony, while he only got to keep a few personal items. He did not receive the photographs of his children that she had initially promised twice a year, and never heard from his family again, even though he tried to reach them through phone calls and letters on several occasions. While in prison, Gacy avoided contact with all homosexual inmates, was reportedly very well behaved, and earned his way to an early release after just 18 months. His father died while he was in prison, which devastated him and re-triggered the belief that it was the disappointment in him that killed his father. He was re-traumatized and required assistance from prison staff for weeks, where he refused to eat, sobbed uncontrollably, and said that he had a heart attack. Once he had processed some of his grief, he became more determined than ever to get out of prison early, which meant studying hard, working hard for the Jaycees, and being a model prisoner. While his first parole application was not successful, he did manage to get out of prison on parole after only 18 months, which was one of his many successes. Not everyone gets that right, but Gacy's charm, manipulation, and extremely hard work did the trick. He moved in with his mother, who he had sustained a close relationship with, and immediately got to work, determined to become financially independent and rebuild his life from scratch. He encountered Carol Hoff, who was friends with his sisters when he was younger, and decided that the familiarity was exactly what he needed to start over. The pair were married in 1972, and Gacy slid into the role of stepfather for her two daughters from a previous marriage. Perhaps in his own mind, this was his way of instantly restoring what he lost, a wife, a home, and two children. By February of 1976, they were divorced, with Gacy lost in a world of homosexuality, sodomy, and serial murder. He worked excessively and blew off some steam by picking up male prostitutes, hitchhikers, runaways, and other young males to have sex with. The ones who raised their agreed price or had a negative experience with him were killed and buried in the crawl space. He had a special pair of boots just for the crawl space, which he kept neatly stored at the entrance. When asked how he slept with all those bodies beneath him, he grunted that he slept just fine, thank you. During this time, he still partied with his employees and the Jaycees, and was reported to have dated a few women, but this was likely just a way to cover his tracks. It seems evident that Gacy had internalized the entirety of the trauma that his father had inflicted on him and channeled it onto young men who either represented his younger self or who unwillingly triggered his homosexuality, femininity, and rage, which he did not know how to process. He was a sexual sadist who enjoyed beating, torturing, and raping young men, often using a variety of sex toys, straps, and other items to heighten the experience for him. Eventually, he got off on watching his victims struggle for life, sometimes so aroused that he would have sex with them once they had died. He kept them relatively close afterward too, either leaving their bodies in his bed to sleep next to, pushing them under his bed, stowing them in the closet, or carrying them up to the attic. Later, he would move them to the crawl space, where he buried them in the trenches that he had asked his teenage employees to dig for him. Sometimes he answered business calls while a victim was struggling for their life, and sometimes he slipped out to church, a business meeting, or to start a fresh day of work directly after murdering someone. He showed no signs of remorse, guilt, or shame about what he had done, even when he was faced with death himself. Some of the emotions that he did show or write about in his meticulous journals were feelings of confusion, depression, and loneliness. He was arrested for murder right before Christmas in 1978, December 23rd, at 4 minutes before noon, and said that he felt no will to live, particularly with Christmas Day being such a painful day for him already. The fact that he was back in prison on Christmas Day, when his initial 10-year sentence would have ended, was devastating for him, and the grief, loss, and depression he struggled with before flooded his mind, especially in remembering his father's death. He later said that on December 25th, 1978, he died. A deafening description of how he felt on that day, even though he lived another 16 years and spent it painting, writing letters, interacting, and keeping detailed logbooks of his daily life. One psychiatrist said that if he had accepted what he had done and processed the full weight of it all, completed suicide was to be expected from him. Perhaps his denial until the day he was executed was the only way that he knew how to survive. Throughout his life, Gacy had a very complex personality and psychological structure, where his outward charm and friendliness were simply the layers that hid the undertones of hostility, shallow range of emotions, and his deep need to always be in control. Psychiatrists observed that he frequently switched between a state of euphoria and depression, both of which were intense and filled with anxiety and agitation. He also struggled with hypochondria, where he sometimes feared that he was born with an upside-down heart, was suffering with heart attacks, and had a terminal illness. It was reported that he had a poorly integrated concept of sexuality, H.L. Morrison, Mass Murderers, Patterns of Behavior and Developmental Deviations, and was observed as being bisexual, even though his sexual fantasies and ideations were mostly homosexual. He had little to no regard for the human form and seemed not to develop the sense that there's a difference between human beings and inanimate objects. This could be due to his father treating him that way, where he was stripped of his rights and humanity at a young age and became numb towards others from enduring it. Because his mother was his only source of comfort and protection as a child, even though she could not prevent the trauma and abuse he suffered, psychologists noted that he was unable to separate his identity from hers, even in later life. He said that he did not murder anyone when his mother had lived with him, which is interesting to consider. When Gacy was arrested, he had a history of indulging in unsafe sex, which resulted in him being syphilitic. Syphilis is a sexually transmitted disease, an STD, which can lead to severe health complications if left untreated. While it was not confirmed what stage of syphilis he was in when it was discovered, it would be interesting to speculate whether or not this affected his mental health at any stage, further complicating his depravity and psychological structure. Source: neuro.psychiatryonline.org. Neurosyphilis mimics many other medical and neuropsychiatric disorders, including personality disorders, psychosis, and dementia. Dementia is the most common presentation of NS in psychiatry. Other presenting psychiatric symptoms have included personality disorders, cognitive impairment, dysphoria, or elevated mood, hallucinations, mania, and delirium. When we look at the personas that Gacy adopted, either to regress into childhood or to bait his victims, it's interesting to observe that he rarely presented himself as just himself. He dressed up as a clown, a police officer, Santa Claus, and had elaborate themed parties, hiding behind many layers of costumes and psychological masks. According to a brother-in-law, his sisters, and his second ex-wife, he had a hang-up with uniforms and displayed odd erratic behavior when he was dressed in character. For example, he raced to accident scenes, joined funeral processions, and joined in when cop cars sped by. He had fitted spotlights onto his car to look like a police vehicle, had badges, belts, buckles, shoes, and jackets to impersonate a police officer, and enjoyed handcuffing his victims with vigor and authority. While he was under surveillance before his arrest for murder, he socialized with the police officers who followed him everywhere, proudly telling them that he was a registered clown, almost prompting them to ask questions about it. When they had asked why he was a clown in his spare time, he answered, "People don't really look at clowns as a person. Clowns can get away with murder." Officers reported that he did not just say this once, but several times, which is how he became known as the Killer Clown, forever tainting the image of children's party entertainers. Even after he was sentenced to death and entered the Guinness Book of World Records for having the longest sentence imposed on a mass murderer, 21 consecutive life sentences and 12 death sentences, he spent his time painting clowns and skulls. It exposes both his arrogance and his denial of what he had done. The only credit he could get is that he was always very consistent in what he did. Spirituality. Gacy was raised as a Roman Catholic and attended a Catholic school at the age of 10. Being of Polish and Danish descent and living in Chicago, Catholicism was one of the most popular religious choices within the community. Many of Gacy's victims were also Catholic, and a memorial service was held at St. Eugene Catholic Church on January 4, 1980, for all whose lives were taken by him. As an adult, his involvement and dreams in politics and the local JCs, combined with his need to build a solid reputation within his community, may have led to him sustaining regular church attendance and playing the part as well as he could to avoid detection. In some ways, he was also securing alibis by attending church, which he sometimes did the morning after committing a murder. Few would have ever believed that a man could commit such heinous crimes and then toddle off to church in the morning, but Gacy was a man of many layers. His ex-wives and neighbors also described him as a devout Roman Catholic and good father, so he definitely succeeded in keeping his halo on his head in public. As a serial killer, he was known to read Bible verses to his victims while they struggled for life following his rope trick. A handful of survivors said that he calmly read Psalm 23 to them as he watched them writhe in pain. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yet though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." It is frightening to think that Gacy would do this as he watched the life drain out of young men's eyes, usually after he had tortured, raped, and beaten them for several hours. In his mind, was it a source of comfort that he was providing them as they died? By telling them not to be afraid of the valley of death? When police officers arrested him in 1978, he was clutching a rosary and kissing it in desperate pleas to escape his fate as his car swayed from side to side. In this state, they were concerned that he was going to commit suicide and arrested him for possession of marijuana. In his 14 years on death row, while he mostly painted clowns, skulls, and celebrities, he also painted his depictions of Jesus Christ. In one of the final interviews conducted with him before he was executed, he quoted from the Bible saying, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord," even though this was merely his way of trying to guilt trip people who supported capital punishment. When his sister, Karen, visited him on the day before his execution, she asked him if he had made peace with God, to which he responded that he had. His final words of "kiss my ass" might reflect otherwise, but at least he was able to offer his sister a moment of peace after many years of pain and trauma.